Good afternoon, Janaranjani listeners. On the eve of World Population Day on the 11th of July, which just happened last Saturday, I have great pleasure in inviting two young people to our Janaranjani broadcast today. One is Dr. Hadiya Valia, a PhD from Macquarie University in Physics. And the other is Ms. Saujanya from Macquarie University, who is doing data science bachelor degree. So today the aim is to touch upon various aspects that are affected by the growing population. And Hadiya and Saujanya are here to participate in the discussion to put together their insights with some quantitative evidences and some data that they have gathered. Welcome, Hadiya and Saujanya.
Thank you. Thank you, Usha.
Thank you, Usha.
Yeah, so shall we begin with you, Hadiya?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Hadiya. I'm a PhD graduate in physics, as Usha has pointed out already. And I'm currently working as a casual tutor at UTS and Western Sydney University. And on this eve of World Population Day, that is 11th of July, you're hearing me on General Engineer Radio. First of all, thanks to General Engineer team for giving me this opportunity. And this is the first time that I'm talking to you via this platform. So to put things into perspective, before we delve deep into the main topic, let us look at some numbers. According to Worldometers, it took all of human history up to 1804 for the world's population to reach 1 billion. But the next 1 billion came in just about 130 years, which is in 1927. Following that, the growth rate really accelerated and reached 3 billion in 1959, that is within 30 years. 4 billion in about 15 years by 1974, and touched 5 billion in 1987. And 11th of July 1987 is the approximate date on which the world's population reached 5 billion. And as of March 2020, the world population has reached 7.8 billion. So that's where we are standing right now. In 1989, that is 2 years after the world population crossed 5 billion, the then Governing Council of the United Nations Development Programme established 11th July as the World Population Day to focus attention on the urgency and importance of population issues such as family planning, gender equality, poverty, maternal health, and human rights. And this day was suggested by Dr. Casey Zakaria when he worked as a senior demographer at the World Bank. And in the year 1994, an international conference on population development was held in Cairo, Egypt, to discuss the various manifestations of population growth. And in this conference, there were about 179 countries participated, and they adopted a revolutionary program of action and called for women's reproductive health and rights to take stage, central stage in national and global development efforts. And the program of action affirmed that, I quote, "The full and equal participation of women in civil, cultural, economic, political, and social life at the national, regional, and international levels, and the eradication of all forms of discrimination based on grounds of sex are priority objectives of the international community," the quote ends. It was also recognized that reproductive health and women's empowerment are intertwined and that both are necessary for the advancement of society. It firmly established the rights and dignity of individuals rather than numerical population targets, where the best way for individuals to realize their fertility goals. Furthermore, governments acknowledge that these rights are essential for global development. So 25 years later, on November 2019, that is last year, November, the United Nations Population Fund, which is abbreviated as UNFPA, together with the governments of Kenya and Denmark, held a conference in Nairobi to accelerate efforts to achieve the unmet goals of ICPD. On this day, that is World Population Day, Advocates from around the world are calling on leaders, policymakers, grassroots organizers, institutions, and others to help make reproductive health and rights a reality for all. And so I think that's the introduction that I want to give at this point. And
Excellent. Yes. Yeah, that's quite a lot of detail.
Yeah.
Let's start it. And I want Sauginya now to start with her own version.
Yeah. Thank you, Haria, for the lovely introduction. And I would also want to thank Chandranjani team and Usha Garu for firstly introducing me into the discussion. Also, Chandranjani team for giving me this opportunity to be here for the first time. And all the numbers you have spoken, Haria, sounds exciting as I'm a data scientist student. So I think this is a lovely topic to start with and much needed discussion, I think. As you have introduced, you have given a rough idea of the growing number of population. I think definitely the statistics sounds interesting, and we can also focus on the, you know, especially the Australian and Indian, because I think it's hard to discuss about the different countries. So currently the world population is growing by 83 million people annually. So that sounds crazy. And with the next 15 years, there can be an increase by more than 1 billion people, reaching 8.6 billion in 2030. So I think definitely we should talk about this. And also, you know, the population has increased by 1 billion from last 12 years. And I thought that there's an interesting fact that which I didn't know is usually as we think about population, we always think that maybe Asian countries contribute more, especially countries like China and India. Mm-hmm. But I've recently discovered that Africa is a major contributor, followed by Asia to the future global population. From here, I think we can definitely discuss about the impacts of population growth has on many different topics, like cities, on cities and villages, on the resources that we can get, like food, water, local resources. And where do you think we should start?
Yeah, I think it's time to discuss some of the impacts of populations on multiple domains, as you discussed. So I think we are all in this pandemic situation. So amid this COVID-19 pandemic, I think the first domain that we can or we should discuss should be about how the population's growth affect the available medical resources. As we have seen, you know, hospital systems collapsing in many countries when the number of COVID cases increases. So I think that's the first point that we need to discuss. And as far as I know, the improvement in medical technology and resources has resulted in a decline in the mortality rate, especially the infant and child mortality rate has drastically reduced because of the improvement in medical technology. And this has resulted in an increase in population, which actually in turn is putting more pressure, additional pressure on the medical system. So Sauginya, can you tell me what your thoughts are about this?
Yeah, definitely, Haria. That's a very good topic to start with. And I definitely think, you know, the supply of health resources in the form of maybe money, materials, and management will be lagged far behind the rising demand due to the increase in the number of consumers. And also the resources needs will continue to increase across all the healthcare settings. And you know, the shortage of healthcare professionals is expected. Yep. And due to this, especially at these times of crisis like COVID, I definitely think there would be this medical resources and shortage of this one would be this can be a disaster. Mm. You know, the diversity of caregivers lags behind the growing diversity of patients too, because, you know, people are especially focusing on the pandemic now, and when this population growth adds on, I think that would definitely be a big disaster.
Right. Yeah. So I think another important aspect is the interplay between education and population growth. And personally, I believe that education is a fundamental human right, and every child deserves the right to get educated. And according to an economics professor at Stony Brook University, his name is Mark Montgomery, and he's a researcher at the Population Council as well. And according to him, education is one of the most powerful tools in stemming population growth. And smaller family sizes allow more children to be educated, and that can promote girls' education. So as we are living in a patriarchal society, where girls from larger families with relatively limited resources will be the least likely to attend schools. So furthermore, increasing population also put pressure on providing education for all. So what do you think about this, about the impact of population on education, and where we are standing at this?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, again, so increase in the population increases in the educational resources and the demand of educational resources. But I think it would be more interesting to discuss how education can moderate population growth, in a way that, so if one of the most powerful tools in education can be one of the most powerful tools in stemming population growth.
Yeah.
For example, the research has found that on average, uneducated Malayalam women gave birth to almost 7 children. So for the better educated, the number was almost 4. When women are educated.
Yeah.
So I think to sum up, education definitely leads to lower birth rates and slows population growth. So this makes easier for countries to develop as well. And more educated workforce also makes poverty eradication and economic growth is easier to achieve. And I definitely think government should be serving people and not the economy more.
Yeah, exactly. And thanks for those numbers, Saujanya. Those were really interesting.
Can I interfere a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Just that Saujanya has got a good point, and Hariya, you have said a good point about how the education would help people in cutting down the population. But from the other sources that I have gathered, it looks like, when, see, for the illiterate people, see the children as the sources of income. So if they have 7 children, they see them as like, once they grow to certain age, even when they are children, that's when they start to work in some kind of place and they bring home some money.
Yes. Yeah, that's the general sentiment. Especially in villages and uneducated masses have, that's the general sentiment that they have. And
continue, please.
Another important thing is that as the world's population is growing, and so is the demand for water, and thus it's put pressure on finite water resources that we have. And climate change, which is also closely tied to population growth, will also lead to greater pressures on availability of water resources. So population growth limits the amount of water available per person that will drive people into marginal areas, which are already water stressed, and also into the cities. And according to the Open Knowledge Repository of World Bank, the per capita water availability is projected to fall by half by 2050. And by 2035, that is just 15 years down the line, 3.6 billion people will be living in areas with water scarcity or water stress. And that's a pretty scary number. And Saujanya, what do you think about this?
Yeah, definitely, Hariya. I think this is a very underestimated topic and discussion, I think, which should really be brought forward. And I'm glad that you've asked about it. And of course, the demand for water increases as the population increases. And As I see this topic, so this demand originates from mainly four main uses. It might be from agriculture, it might be from energy production, and it might be from industrial uses, and it might be from human consumption. So the production of crops and livestock is water intensive. And as a result, agriculture is the largest water user, accounting for 70% of the global water withdrawal. And the rest 30% would be used by municipal, energy, and industrial sectors.
Right.
So this means more the population, more the demand for livestock products, and more demand for food. And this leads to more demand for water as well. So I would say changing consumption patterns with water intensive foods such as meat, you know, for example, 150,000 liters of water are needed for just 1 kg of beef. So this is an example or a rough estimate of how much water is needed for the to produce the livestock or the daily needs. Even in the recent paper, I've read that just for production of 1 kg rice, we need several number of tons of water. So I think everybody should keep this in mind. Not that I'm not asking anybody to, you know, reduce or eat rice less, but this is a different perspective to see, and not many people are aware of it.
Right. Yeah. That's
important. Can I interfere a little bit?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
It's a good point that livestock and food consumption and water usage by humans, it is projected in the media as like being the, you know, being a big chunk of the water usage. But from some other sources, we also hear that the industries are the culprit.
Right.
So
yes, definitely.
Industries are using water enormously. And also, they are throwing away all the rubbish water into the oceans. They're damaging the thing. So, I think, I mean, if I can dare to say this, that is the irresponsible behavior of the industries rather than the pollution. And they always throw the blame on you. Okay, use less water. You know, have short shower and
that's water. Right.
And that. So, but the amount of water that we humans can save. With you know, with our reduced needs, will never be enough.
Right.
To solve the problem unless the industrial people.
Do
this.
That's right. Yeah, the corporates are the real culprits.
See, penny-wise, pound foolish. It is becoming like that.
Definitely.
Governments say save every drop of water. Yes, we are saving, but what about the industries? No one is cautioning them.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And secondly, the lack of water is also giving us a scope for research into desalination of the seawater.
Seawater,
and then see, you know, we have abundant seawater, and then we are having flooding, and then sometimes the tsunamis and all these. So water is around us everywhere. Just that it's not drinkable, it's not usable.
So how much would it cost? Like I've heard that desalination is a bit costly, expensive technique.
That's because there is not much support for that.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, you know, if the governments are supporting those projects, there are so many youth, you know, like PhDs like you, you know, so many people can get into that, and then they can make a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Continue.
That's right. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for those points, Usha.
Thank you.
Yeah, that those were really helpful. So I think the next point that we need to talk about, which is very urgent to talk about, is the air quality issue, air pollution, and you know, so this air pollution and the population health is, I think, one of the most important environmental and public health issues that we are facing right now. So as Saujanya pointed out, economic development, urbanization, transportation, and, you know, rapid population growth are some of the, you know, major driving factors that forces air pollution in large cities, especially in the mega cities that we talk. Yeah. And I've read a recent paper by Shikwamba and the South African Geographical Journal. It's a journal by Taylor and Francis. And it has shown that there's a close link between population growth, land use, and air quality. So do you have some quantitative numbers to state this on how air pollution is getting deteriorated by the population growth?
Yeah, definitely, Harya. So air quality is also a very important topic. So I think the increase in population is most likely to generate increased emissions, thus creating the pressure on the ambient air quality. So when burned, fossil fuels release carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the environment. This is very, very obvious point that everybody knows. So in addition, the manufacturing industry grows exponentially with the expansion of human population, definitely. And more people means more demand for oil, more demand for gas, coal, and other fuels mined or drilled from below the Earth's surface that when buried spew enough carbon dioxide into the atmosphere to trap warm air inside like a greenhouse. So this again diverts to the topic to the global warming and environmental changes. I would like to focus and tell that moreover, people in developed countries like United States require substantially more resources, to maintain their lifestyles.
Right.
And compared with people in developing countries. So for example, I've taken United States, which contains 5% of the world population, but currently it produces a full of 25% of the carbon dioxide, world's carbon dioxide emissions. Wow. So I think this definitely gives a good picture of how this air quality and how the population growth and how is it associated with large cities and large countries and education and various factors.
That's really interesting, and it's really important that we have these kind of resources, like the food resources, agriculture, livestock, and water, land, and other resources. And it's really important that how these resources are distributed across the globe. As you rightly pointed out, there's a huge inequality in the distribution. Like according to Global Footprint Network, I've heard that a global population living the lifestyle of an average American, for example, would require 5 times the resources we have available on Earth. So that really shows the inequality in the distribution of resources. So
it also sounds like it is inevitable, population growth and many factors associated with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. To interrupt your very interesting conversations. Another 4 minutes left, please.
Sure.
I think to sum up, you have touched upon most important items such as water and air quality, medical and education. I would like you, and food and agriculture.
Yeah.
I would like you to just throw some light on the city life versus village. And how the handicrafts industries would be affected by this population thing.
Yeah. So
I want to just close this in the next 4 minutes.
So according to the UN, United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs, 55% of the world's population lives in urban areas, and this proportion is expected to increase to 68% by 2050. And one of the recent reports in 2018, that's Revision of World Urbanization Prospects, and that's again produced by the Population Division of the United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs. And it notes that future increases in the size of world's urban population are expected to be highly concentrated in just a few countries. For example, together, India, China, and Nigeria will account for 35% of the projected growth of the world's urban population between 2018 and 2050. So by 2050, it is projected that India will have added 416 million urban dwellers, China 255 million, and Nigeria 189 million. We presume that the impact of population growth will be different across, you know, urban and rural areas. So, Saujina, can you show us how it will be different?
Definitely. Yeah. And Hadia, your numbers have really given, you know, almost all of the picture of it. Mm-hmm. But I would say the world population is definitely becoming increasingly urban, and it has started sometime in 2007. Which has become a turning point when city dwellers formed the majority of the global population for the first time in the history. Mm. So also I would say that migration is a very significant and controversial part of this urban population growth.
Yes, yes.
Because in some places, particularly in poorer countries, as you said, mm. migration is a main driver for the urbanization. And furthermore, in 2009, mm. UN Habitat estimated that 3 million people were moving to cities every week. Mm. And that's a huge number and gives a very good picture of migration and urbanization.
Exactly, yeah.
And also in countries like Dubai and Brussels, the number of migrants account for more than half of the population.
Mm.
This brings us down to the widespread challenges in terms of service provision for a growing number of people as well.
Mm.
Well, this problem of access to services such as housing, sanitation, education, or employment, which causes rural to urban migrations, are not inevitable. So I would say rather they are caused by poor planning. And mm-hmm. if well-planned, migration can enhance the dynamism of cities, making them healthier, more profitable, and more interesting places to live. I think so.
Mm. Yeah.
And yeah, sure. So as we also discussed the population growth in rural areas, I think talking about the impact of population growth in rural areas, to be honest,
mm-hmm.
change the term from population growth to population decline when talking about rural areas.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
When people move away from villages, things like jobs, schools, shops, and other facilities will also disappear slowly. And the causes might be fewer children are born, and families with children move to larger towns and cities. Young and better educated people move to larger towns and cities. So this might be some of the reasons regarding the population decline in rural areas. So population decline in villages might affect in fewer schools due to there being fewer children. And a drop in house prices as more houses are unoccupied. So this might be the impacts of decline in the rural areas.
Right. So,
Yeah,
it's good. Maybe it's time for us to just wind this up.
Yeah, I think we are taking a lot of time.
It's opening up so much opportunity to think of the solutions that various scientists are trying.
Yeah.
But hopefully, one positive side of COVID could be that people see the uselessness of staying in a city, and because with the widespread internet and all, they could work, and if they are working from home, they could work from a village home as well.
Yeah, I think definitely that's a good perception to see.
Yeah. Let us hope that things will turn around and they're sorted better, and everyone feels the pressure to work responsibly and be friendly to the nature, the resources of the nature. So I think at this point I would say my huge thanks to both of you for so much of valuable information from internet and various journals. So on behalf of Jenna Ranjani, I thank Hadia and Saujanya for spending good time to really come up with this beautiful conversation. And I hope to continue talking to you further. And also maybe in future, we will talk about more interesting topics as well.
Thank you, Usha, and the whole general engineering team. And I think before we wind up, I just want to make a quick point. One of the major issues that we have discussed a lot of issues right now, but one thing that we missed is about the human rights issues that we are facing because of, again, that could be attributed to population issues. So a group of human beings are marginalized and discriminated in the name of multiple reasons like race, color, ethnicity, caste, yes, religion, gender, etc. and whatnot. So on this day, let us pledge to raise our voice within our capacity against all the human rights violations that's happening across the globe. And yeah, I think that's the main point that I want to tell before ending.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I think that's a very strong point. And I definitely agree with you.
Yeah.
And my special thanks to both of you. And Saujanya, being a data science student, you have brought in some very excellent facts.
Exactly, yes, lots of numbers.
lot of meat into the story, and it's very, very nice conversation. I have learned so many things from both of you. Thank you.
Yeah,
so
even I have learned a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah.